Hello, I'm Izzy Grossoff, and this is the Some Gender Going On podcast, episode 11. Today, we're talking about norms. So these are questions about what's normal, what's abnormal, how do we feel about doing what we're supposed to do, and about what we're not supposed to do, and how does all of it interact with gender? So the thing about norms is people expect unusual individuals, people without the sign-off of structures of power and expectations, to be scary. The street heckler, the stranger, the one-off individual who's a deviation from the norm. They're so used to the norm being good, and that the bad in the world coming from those weird people who don't follow that norm. Normal is good is their whole perspective on the world, the only lens they have to view it through. But what if normal isn't good? What if normal is kind of shit, actually? That's gender, in my experience. The scariest interactions for me aren't when I encounter someone weird, out on a dark night, or in a packed bus terminal, a stranger, somebody odd and abnormal who doesn't follow the rules. That's not what's scary for me, gender-wise. The scariest interactions are the most normal, the most filled with norms. Bureaucracy, so things like human resources. Filling out a form, not knowing if it's going to be used to deny me healthcare if I complete it accurately, or used to misgender me for years if I complete it as expected. That's not a hypothetical, by the way. I legitimately was filling out a form where it's like, I'm in a catch-22. If I fill it out accurately, maybe they fuck me over. If I fill it out inaccurately, they'll definitely fuck me over. What do I do? I agonized about it for a while, and eventually I went with the truth. I didn't fill in any of the options they wanted. As it turned out, the form was just out of date. They'd already published one that was better, but this HR person didn't know it, and I'm sure if I'd filled it out inaccurately in a hope to dodge those adversarial consequences, they would have just used it to misgender me for the next, well, the rest of my life, probably. Of course, these things just happen. And it's not that one individual's fault. It's the system's fault. And that's why systems are scary. Another thing that's intensely norm-filled are laws. Fearing I violated something, or that somebody might complain about me to authority, is terrifying. Because what do you do against that power? It's hopeless. This is one of the reasons I didn't switch my bathroom usage until this summer. That pile of norms around that situation. I worry about what I wear in my own apartment. Worry that somebody might see me in my window and decide that I'm indecent and report me. I don't worry that a peeping Tom might see me and it'll be unpleasant or embarrassing. I'm not scared of an abnormal individual trying to cause me harm. It's an individual. Why would I care? They don't have norms behind me. They don't have norms behind them. They can't do anything to me. No, I worry a peeping Tom might see me and get me arrested. Because I worry about people with the oppressive power of norms behind them. I don't feel like I'm normal and I should be fearing weird people. I feel like I'm weird and I fear excessively normal people. Excessively norm-enforcing people. So whenever someone tells me, oh, get home safe on a dark night, it doesn't fit. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like me. Out on a dark night, that's when the norms are the lightest. That's when no one can see me. That's when nothing matters. When I can be anyone, and the pressure is as light as it gets. The night belongs to me. Nobody's ever going to tell me to get home safe when I'm panicking over someone looking in my window. No one's going to tell me to go to work safe when I'm worried that the clothes I wear aren't what people are expecting. I had so much panic around my job interviews that I might wear the wrong thing and put myself on the back foot for that whole interview and for years to come afterwards. That's not a fear that's uplifted and supported. It's the fears of the abnormal, of the uncertain, those are the fears that societally we support. But as I say, what I'm scared of is being the abnormal one. I'm not scared of the abnormal one coming after me. I don't think I ever will be. Let's talk about norms that we experience when growing up. Every norm around gender growing up tells us constantly, don't explore, don't grow, don't discover. At least that's what they all told me growing up. Maybe the world's getting to be a better place. It's certainly going to be better for my kids. But those norms that I had growing up, they told me, this is who you are. This is who you'll ever be. This is all you can ever enjoy. This is the only way you can ever present yourself. This is who you can love. This is how you can think of yourself, restricted and bound and nailed down and immovable. This is who you are. I know you better than you know yourself. We know you better than you know yourself. You are nothing before our might, the might of the norms of gender. And if you don't obey what's normal for somebody of your gender, for a little boy like you, if you don't conform, you don't fit, that means you're gross, you're deviant, you're ugly. In the terminology of the time, you're gay. Now, I'm completely happy if somebody calls me gay, but that's not what the norm was at the time. That's not what I grew up internalizing and believing. That's what it was like, especially from peers. But not everybody's that mean. Some people are just as norm-bound as that, as the way I just put it, but they're less mean about it. So they might say, oh, you're setting yourself up to get attacked. You're setting yourself up to get bullied. You can't wear that. You can't go out like that. You can't present like that. You'd get attacked. And with the implication, of course, just behind the words, just lingering underneath there, and it'd be your fault. Because you could have just stayed in your lane and kept your head down and done what you're supposed to do and done what you're told. Oh, and I'm just telling you all this for your own good. I don't want all those mean, pesky norms to crush you to a pulp. I'm just going to make sure you're crushed. I'm going to just make sure you obey the norms, and then there won't have to be any consequences. You see, it's really quite insidious. Rules enforcement isn't just done by the people who feel antagonistic towards those being suppressed. It's being done by everyone who expects that nothing will change, and who sees a norm, sees a person who just wants things to be different, says, I'm so sorry, but there's nothing that can be done. That's just how things are. Now don't put a toe out of line. Now, of course, I phrase this as if the only norms that ever came for anybody were those on the gender non-conforming person themselves, on the exploring trans person to be, that they were the only person who was going to catch the negative side of norms if they put a toe out of line. But that's not true, is it? A lot of norms enforcement is on the people around the gender nonconforming individual. Their spouse, their parents, their siblings, their relatives. People who the norm enforcer, that blank face of society's demands, that the norm enforcer thinks, well, you should have made them stop. Why didn't you make them stop? Are you okay with this? Are you supportive of this? How could you? How could you be such a bad parent? How could you be such a bad spouse? How could you allow them to do this? Why didn't you stop it? Now, to those people, maybe they're not getting beaten up like a kid might be in school, but maybe they're just getting some really uncomfortable conversations. Maybe they're getting some social ostracization. Maybe they're not invited to the cool parties anymore. Maybe they just get really awkward conversations every time they talk with their friend for the next 5 years. And maybe, anticipating all those awkward conversations, they capitulate. They say, yeah, they've got a point. I should be enforcing that norm. I should be telling my kid they can't wear that dress. I should be telling them makeup looks horrible on you. I should be telling them that. Because I don't want those awkward conversations. I don't want to keep explaining myself. Better to just make them fit in. None of this is a hypothetical, by the way. Once, it took me a long time to learn it, but people close to me, who I didn't think wanted me any the worse, were trying to enforce norms on me. And why were they doing that? Because they didn't want awkward conversations. They cared more about that little consequence on themselves than on me living my life, on my happiness, on my authenticity. And that's how it typically is. Because authenticity, how could that matter so much compared to all these awkward conversations? Maybe you could just tone it down while you're around them. I don't want to spark anything. Well, maybe you can go fuck yourself. How about that? Maybe I'm going to be yourself, and that sounds like a shit norm, and I didn't make it. It's not my responsibility. I'm not going to change to shelter you from something when it's going to make me miserable to change, and the thing you're being sheltered from shouldn't exist, and it's not my fault it does. I'm not going to be bound by that, and if you want to be, you don't get to bind me. And one reason why this is also important is norms change. If we can see that they shouldn't be there, if we can see that how things are isn't how things should be, we can do better. We can create our own little bubble where the world works differently. We can slowly bring people into that bubble and expand it outward until the world just looks different. If enough people do it, if enough bubbles expand and join up, they'll eventually swathe the world. But it involves a lot of fighting against the norms along the way to build those bubbles, to keep pushing them outward. This is why I think the truer version of ally is accomplice. An ally is someone who sticks with you when the norms are on your side. Ally comes from the military concept. My country will stick by your country. It's very norms governed, very heavy rules about how to be an ally the right way, both in that geopolitical context, but also in the interpersonal context. Look at me, I'm such a good ally. Look at me is saying, I followed the norms. I did it right. I'm a good ally. And to be clear, having an ally to stick with you when the norms are on the side, it's nice. It's important. It's something. There's a lot of ways in which that makes life a whole lot nicer. And I really appreciate it. When push comes to shove, the support that ally is giving you, the rope they're helping to hold you up and support you with, it's only as long as the norms reach. And beyond that, when push comes to shove, you hit the end, the norms aren't on your side anymore, that's it. That far and no farther. You're too weird, so you're on your own. That's the mindset that comes behind allyship. An accomplice, on the other hand, is someone who will have your back even when the going gets rough, even when the norms aren't on your side, even when they're doing, and you're both doing, what you're not supposed to do. At least that's how society sees it. To go a step past the rules into the realm of how the world could be, not just how it is. Into a different view of what should be the case, that's going to have to go through some hard times to get there. That's an accomplice. What it comes down to is conformity and complacency never got us anywhere, especially when it comes to gender. Sticking with the old rules, sticking with the hand we were dealt, that's never worked for me. And somebody who's going to say, these rules are shit, I'm not going to live by them, on the support, in order to support somebody else, that's big, that's tough, and that's important. And those people are special, and they don't come along that often. That picture that norms don't have all the power, that they can change, and that we can live outside them, I think this is why a lot of people hatched over the pandemic. For me, I'd already hatched, but I'd say I solidified, shook off the remnants of eggshell, over the pandemic. People say that the pandemic gave us time and space to explore, and that's true as far as it goes, but we can be more specific, there's more going on. During the pandemic, there was much less norm enforcement of gender. More socializing was by text, rather than visual or audio, and there's much less gendered rules around text communication. There's more freedom to wear what we want, to present to ourselves how we want, separately from presenting to others. There's just less people around to enforce the norms on us. No day job to be used as a mechanism for enforcement. No in-person shopping to be used as a mechanism of enforcement. With that lifting of norms, with that freedom, that comes authenticity. From there comes gender. I mean, it's not the end of the story. There's many more factors, but it certainly helped. Can't say many positive things about the pandemic, but less norms enforcement, 100% that was one of them. So that's how norms are and how they were. But norms are shifting too. In some spaces, the body of norms have reoriented, so people don't think I'm so weird. And it's pretty wonderful, because some of those consequences of norms, stepping outside norms, really, really strict. I know so many people who were hit by the broadside of norms enforcement at the intensity they used to be against transness and other forms of gender nonconformity. But, I mean, norms don't purely change for the good. For instance, in a lot of spaces I'm in, people have this very intense norm that people are supposed to get my pronouns right. So if they don't, and I tell them they got it wrong, they failed the norm. So they're intensely apologetic. And they're peeved that I'm enforcing the norm on them. I can hear it in their voice. Because if I don't point it out, well, then they haven't violated a norm. Norms have this heavy weight. Like they come from the narrator of the story. They are the ultimate truth of the universe. At least if you're the sort of person who hasn't started to question them yet. And so they feel like they're omnipresent. Like if you stick one toe out of line, you'll be caught. So people feel like every time they mess up a pronoun, someone's jumping down their throat. When in reality, it's a very reticent, gentle, conflict-averse reminder. At least when I do it. And it's certainly not every time. I might let somebody know one time in five if I feel really comfortable around them. Or maybe 1 in 100 if I feel like I have to. Or never if I just want out of the whole situation. I'm so reticent in part because I don't like enforcing norms. Even when those norms are in line with my preferences, what's accurate to describe me. I don't want to be a cop. Because norms only create guilt. They only create conflict. They don't create change, except over years, perhaps. But, you know, I do want people to see me accurately. It's just that these norms aren't really helping towards that goal. But that being said, I'd like to stop preemptively talking somebody down whenever they're apologetic about misgendering me. It's a form of self-minimization, and I certainly minimize myself when it comes to gender stuff a lot. Might not sound like it, because you're hearing me through a podcast like this, which is my environment that I get to control, and so it's pretty easy to be confident here, but a lot of times when it comes to gender things, I'm very averse to standing up for myself. A lot of people are. So I need to practice. When somebody he's me, and then I say, oh, it's they, she, by the way, and then they apologize profusely, like, oh shit, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to. Well, instead of what I do right now, which is tell them, oh, it's not so bad at that, oh, don't apologize, oh, it's fine, oh, just, you know, you'll get it right next time, don't worry about it, at least you're trying, as rapidly, as panicky as I can, what I want to do is just, you know, they'll apologize however they apologize, and I'll just smile a bit and say, thanks, I appreciate it, and then move on. It's going to take a lot of practice. I'm certainly not there yet, because I feel like I've hurt them. I feel like I've hurt them by bringing down the hammer of this norm on their back. But the norms and their emotions about being hit by those norms, they're not my responsibility. Best I can do is model a chill reaction that'll gently shift the norm towards it being a chill learning process and not this desperately intense slight of violence like people are currently treating it like it is. Anything more than that isn't really up to me. I don't control those norms. I don't control what people think is an appropriate reaction to a reminder. I'm not making them apologetic. The norm is. And the norm is out of my hands. So, okay. This is one aspect of the general concept of trans people are people. Treat us with respect. It's not tuned quite right just yet. Maybe it'll get there in the future. Certainly better than it used to be. But it's not like everybody likes that norm, the respect. Some people want to be able to call people whatever they want. It doesn't feel like an insult to them to intentionally misgender somebody. So they resist the don't insult people norm because it doesn't feel like an insult to them. They might call it compelled speech. You see this a lot on certain strains of the internet. In other words, they want to hold the realms of norm creation in this discourse space. They don't like being pushed around, feeling like they're not the defining members of society, that society is telling them what to do. And I get it. I didn't like society telling me what to do. It sucked. If you want to find your own way through to navigate that situation, more power to you. At the end of the day, what matters is who are you hurting, not what does the norm tell you to do. So I say, if you want to just avoid using gendered terminology to refer to me because you're not comfortable using they or she with somebody who looks like me and sounds like me, more power to you. I don't care. If you're not hurting me, do whatever. But if you want to go and insult me, and if you want to go lie to yourself that you're not, well, now it's my problem. So, that's what it comes down to. So these people, you know, they want to hold the reins of norm creation, and they don't like it, and they're dressing up that distaste in the language of freedom, saying, I'm not free to speak how I like. No, you're free to speak how you like. You're just not free to control the consequences of that speech. You don't like not controlling the consequences. So that's one side of it. But that's certainly not everybody's reaction to not liking these norms. Some people, they don't like these norms in a very different way. They want people like me, like trans people, to be regarded as gross sinners, like I grew up thinking I was. So they'll talk about protecting our children to promote their goal of harming trans people, and in particular, harming their children. When somebody talks about protecting their children, and their child is trans, well, there was a famous quote I remember hearing where a politician said they'd rather their kid be dead than trans. And that tells you exactly what protecting means to them. What they're really trying to do is exert control over the norms that their children exist within, the pressures that are being exerted on their children. They're trying to exert that control because they feel those norms slipping away from them. They feel the reins of power they have over their children, over the people in their societies and their communities. They feel that as reins of power slipping away from them. Well, they'll dress it up in the language of safety, about protecting, but it's all about control of norms and hurting whoever's necessary to obtain that control. They want to enforce the world they want to see. And it's not their world to shape, not anymore. And they hate it. And they're desperately trying to control those norms to push back the tide. It's not going to work. At a more fundamental level, outside of visible signifiers like pronouns, there's a very fundamental change in norms going on. Trans people are becoming people. We're not just monsters or murder victims on cop shows. We're not just a punchline on a sitcom. We're people. And the norms around us are shifting too. As people, the norm is that we deserve respect and care and inclusion, just like everybody else. Governments will try to pass laws against us. They have, they are, and they will. Through those laws and through every other tool they can come up with, they'll try to control the norms. They'll try to make us disgusting and inhuman again, like the norm said we used to be. They will fail. Now, all this fighting over whose norms are best, whose norms control our actions, it all matters in the world we currently live in. A world where the dominant norms dictate 1,000 aspects of how we live our lives, what's acceptable, what's possible, what's reasonable, what's good. In a norm-ruled world, having trans-supportive norms is deeply vital. It's the only way we can live a good life. But what about a world in which we didn't put our faith in norms? To be clear, I'm not talking about having less norms. Often, norms are in a push and pull conflict with each other, where the presence of one norm seeks to push away another or prop up another. For instance, a norm of don't yell transphobic things at people in public is a norm that seeks to prop up the further norm of it's fine to be trans in public. Nobody's going to yell at you. And on the flip side, it's fine to yell transphobic things at people in public, seeks to prop up, don't be trans in public. There's really not a less norms option here. So you can say, oh, I want freedom, which means people can say whatever they want in public and be whatever they want in public. Well, at the end of the day, you can't have it both ways. Either people are going to be yelling at me and threatening to beat me up and maybe beating me up, or I'm going to be trans, and I'm going to be saying I'm trans, and I'm going to be not getting beaten up. Freedom doesn't really help in this situation. But it's very easy to conflate the norms that do exist with the norms that should exist, or the norms that will inevitably continue to exist. And it's very easy to see norms as permanent and inflexible, and that there's nothing any of us can do, so we should all just get in line. But we do have choices. We have control. We can say, well, sure, that's how it is, but that's not how it should be. Norms do change, gradually and piecemeal, and through the collective actions of many, many people pushing on them. And even before they've changed at large, we can carve out little pieces of our world where they don't exist, where we can foster a little community with different rules than elsewhere, where we don't trust the norms that already exist. that's a less normative world. That's not putting our faith in the norms that exist. That's saying, I'm going to figure out what's right for myself. I'm not going to let you tell me where you is society, where you is whoever's pushing those larger scale norms. Now, this sort of thinking explicitly and intentionally about norms, it also extends to thinking about the kind of norms we want in spaces where we do have more control. For instance, say we see a classic internet call-out post or video or Google Doc or what have you. When we see it, we need to think about, well, we can think about what norm is being pushed via that post and whether we want to maintain and strengthen that norm or whether we want to let it fall by the wayside. Remember, the norm being pushed is whatever caused the call-out push, the call-out post to be written in the first place. That's the behavior that a norm is being imposed by. Or whatever caused the call-out post to be written is what the norm is enacting upon, is what it's pushing on. Many of the incidents or allegations in a call-out post are dredged up to flesh it out, but they're ancillary to the underlying concern that caused it to be written. So let me give you an example of a call-out post I like and agree with and support, and one I don't like and I don't agree with and I don't support. For an example of a post I like, I saw one alleging, with considerable evidence, that a organizing and leadership figure in a particular tech space had a very long history of sexualizing those spaces, creating sexual interactions with both adult women and girls in those spaces, and enacting a variety of sexual harassment and other sexual malpractice in his capacity as an organizing and leadership individual. This is an entirely appropriate call-out post. And the reason it is because the norm being enforced, namely, don't hit on girls, don't hit on people you have power and authority over, don't make a space that's where people didn't opt into sexuality into a sexual space. These are all norms that I agree with and support. And I'm confident that this call-out post is enforcing that norm, and it's a norm that I like and I'm glad is being enforced. For an example of a call-out post I didn't like, I saw one where a visible trans person was being castigated for including a brief voiceover in a video she made. This voiceover was made by a trans person with a very different opinion on what the trans community is and should be. The voiceover person centers his transness in his biology, putting the focus on his hormones and his surgery, and describing himself as transsexual. That is, centering his transness on his sex, his biology. Transgenderness, the self-conception part, the identity part, is not a key part of his identity. He also doesn't think that non-binary people like me should be considered transgender at all, apparently. Which I'm not really sure how he'd react to me personally, given that I pursue hormones and am non-binary. Am I transsexual to his eyes? No idea. This person is both describing his identity, he is transsexual, and he's also attempting to resurrect a norm which used to exist in many parts of the community, that the one single key part of transness is transing one's sex, not transing one's gender, and that non-binary people, presumably regardless of whether we trans our sex, shouldn't be in the community because, at least to this person's eyes, there are no non-binary sexes. Now, that's not true, but perhaps that's how he sees the world. Now, I want to separate here his identity, where he centers his sense of self, from the norm he wants to push. I think his identity, centered on his biology, is an entirely legitimate identity. It's an entirely legitimate sense of what he thinks is important about himself. I think his norm, that that's the only way to be trans, and that that's the most trans you can be, I disagree with. And his norm that the trans community should only include people who take medical steps towards their transness and should only respect people to the degree that they have done so, I strongly disagree with it. That is a norm called transmedicalism, and I very much wanted to consign it to the dustbin of history. Now, I think it's entirely appropriate to attempt to push people out of a community for trying to promulgate a harmful norm, because norms won't stay if people are trying to tear them down, you don't do anything about it. And that's what's been done with this voiceover person. And I agree with that. This is in contrast to somebody who might center their identity on transing their sex, but doesn't try to exclude anybody else. Doesn't try to exclude people like me who don't center their identity in that way. If somebody centers their identity that way, but is comfortable with me censoring my identity a different way, they are entirely welcome in my community, in my book. And I think there are some norms that need to be changed to make sure that those people are welcome. In particular, a lot of trans spaces I've seen have a taboo on the word transsexual and automatically try to talk people out of describing themselves that way. I don't think that's appropriate. I think that it's an entirely legitimate self-identity term, and if somebody wants to use it, they're more than welcome to. But the call-out post I saw wasn't about trying to push this person out of the community, or I'd have been all in favor of it. No, the call-out post I saw wasn't about enforcing a norm against this guy at all. They were trying to enforce a norm against the person who made the video that included this voiceover. And that's a different situation. Because the norm that they were trying to enforce was, everyone must enforce the norm against transmedicalism. Now, I've said that I endorse this norm. But evidently, the person making this video wasn't enforcing it that hard. Maybe it's because she wasn't aware of this person's transmedicalism, or maybe it's because she doesn't put as high a weight on pushing that person out of the community, or what have you. We disagree about that. And this call-out post was about trying to enforce a norm saying you're not allowed to disagree. Fall in line, enforce the norm, or get lost. And the norm of enforce this norm or else is not generally helpful. It doesn't lead to the kind of world I want to live in. It leads to a culture of extreme rigidity and inflexibility, where we're too busy enforcing norms and verifying that other people are enforcing norms to think about what norms should exist. Nothing can change if life is nothing but enforced enforcement. And I want to clarify something here as well. This wasn't a situation where the video maker was platforming the norm enforcement by, or the attempted shift in norms towards transmedicalism by the voiceover person. That was just stuff that the voiceover person had advocated in a separate context. In the video itself, there wasn't any transmedicalism being pushed. It was pretty anodyne. So I don't want a norm of enforced norms and don't associate people who are pushing harmful norms. It's too policey, too circular firing squad. And so, at long last, after having talked over this concept for quite a while, I've decided what norms I want to exist. And so I can decide what norms I will support. And it's not this one. Mandatory enforcement is not a norm I want to support. So, I'm on board with discussing the ills of this voiceover person and using this situation as an opportunity to discuss community norms around their position and against transmedicalism, and to bring that contrast to the attention of the video maker, give them the opportunity, should they wish to do so, to take a stand. But if they choose not to, then I don't want them castigated. I don't want them to have major professional consequences. I don't want them to have a bunch of people yelling at them over the internet or anything like that for not enforcing this norm. Because my opinion on the matter is, I don't want a norm of you must enforce this norm. And so, I'm not going to contribute to that. Now, you might hear about all this norms over famous people, and ask, does it really matter? I mean, nobody's going to write a call-out post about me, almost certainly. Or if it does, it'll be very different and addressed to a much smaller community of people. So does it matter, the norms that are enforced against famous people? Well, yes, it does. Because this is how norms disseminate into the wider world. If a famous person is visibly raked over the coals and has consequences based on some norm, it makes it clear what is and is not acceptable as far as those norms go. It clarifies what the norm is when a famous person gets hit by it. And it clarifies what the norm is for everyone, not just the famous person. Or at least it starts to move a norm in that direction. If a famous person is accused and not much happened and things go back to normal, it makes it clear what is and is not acceptable for everyone. Or at least it starts to move the norm in a different direction. And those aren't the only two possibilities. If it turns out that the accusation was bullshit, or at least it appears that way, that moves the norm. If it turns out that it's a more complicated situation, that moves the norm. And if you don't like it, well, see the earlier part of this podcast about not putting our faith in norms. After all, they move in these pretty strange ways that have more to do with the specifics of a situation involving a famous person than they necessarily do about whether a norm is good or not. So make up your own mind about the norms you want to see. Don't get too hung up on what's good or bad for this one famous person. I don't care what happens to them. I care about what happens to the rest of us. And also refer back to the earlier part of the podcast about not being in favor of required enforcement. In large part, that's how we got to this situation in wider society around gender. The norm that really makes parents shut down their kids' gender nonconformity, it's not just the norm against the child doing that. It's the norm against the parent allowing it to happen. The parent has that awkward conversation with the school or the other concerned parents. The norm is that the parent must enforce gender norms upon those under their control. That's the norm that really causes that outcome. So, let's chill, okay? Let's think, separating the norms that are and the norms that we see people trying to create from the norms that we want to exist. And let's separate the norms we want to exist from how we're going to live our lives. Because we don't have to be defined by norms. We can make our own decisions. So, to wrap things up, we live in a world of norms. One can be aware of those norms and not internalize them into one's own sense of self, one's own sense of how things should be. We can choose where we want to strengthen norms and where we want to shift them, when to be an accomplice that a friend needs and go outside the bounds of what's allowed and what people expect of us. In the world of gender, we step into a world of rigid, heavy rules from almost the day we're born. And we destabilize, subvert, evade those rules. That's what it is to be trans. And maybe, just by living, maybe because there's not really any other way to be ourself. So we destabilize them because we have to. And maybe because we want to, because maybe they're shit. And we carve out our own little worlds that look the way we want them to. Maybe a world of just ourself, or of a few trusted people, or those bubbles start to merge and grow. So think about the norms you see. Think about who they help or harm. Think about the world that you want to exist. And think about who you can help and who can help you. This world is so much brighter for all the norms we've shed. And as we enjoy that change, we can also carry it forward into a colorful, joyous future. Thank you for listening, and thank you for thinking. I'll see you next time.